The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Donald Trump is in the courthouse right now. I mean, history has begun.
Yeah, reality has arrived.
Yeah,
he doesn't have a choice in the matter.
You had reported shortly before that during a break that he appeared to be falling asleep at one point as the proceedings were getting kind of tedious. Did you notice that?
Mm-hmm. I mean, yes, I noticed it. He made a pretty specific stare at me and walked out of the room.
His demeanor in court, the room reporters are allowed in the room. They suggest he looked really frustrated at times. At a couple different moments, he closed his eyes.
Hold on a second, though. Using the Trump standard for judging Joe Biden when he closes his eyes and prays at a memorial service in Hawaii, then he's sleepy and he's dopey. If Joe Biden did that in a courtroom, they would say he was comatose and had to be rushed to, you know, Bellevue or something like that. But yeah, you can just look at his face and see that the weight of all this is finally weighing down on him.
The preamble to the jury selection, he may have dozed off a couple times, but
as that process itself dragged on, Trump did continue to look a little bit perhaps bored. He closed his eyes again.
And the sustained eye resting that apparently happened in the courtroom. I mean, I do feel like if you call your opponent Sleepy Joe, you have one job rest of the campaign, yeah. Which is like you got to like clockwork orange those puppies, like open at all times.
Having to sit there and be captive while we all report on him is going to be deeply uncomfortable for him because he is somebody who likes to control things.
This was the first time a former president and to be presidential nominee as sitting as a criminal defendant.
And it's going to be a long trial.
The split screen will be Donald Trump in a courtroom, Joe Biden on a campaign trail. So I think that's a very important juxtaposition.
Well, let's have a very brief, and I promise brief, visit to our founders in 1787, writing the Constitution. I think they felt that they had created a political system that would choose people as presidents who were not too likely to have been to be accused of criminal conduct. I think that's safe. So if they came back in 2024, the first thing they would say, I think, is, you know, our system did not work. What happened?
And the people who either support Donald Trump unquestioningly or who have enabled this for their own partisan reasons have to really look in the mirror and decide, is this really the hill they want to die on?
Yeah.
Is Donald Trump worth the Constitution?
For me, there is something wonderfully poetic about the fact that despite the fact that even if convicted, he's not going to go to prison, the first person to actually criminally prosecute Donald Trump is a black Harvard grad, the very kind of person that his former staff, the people who worked for him, Stephen Miller, et cetera, want to never be at Harvard Law School. But he was. And he came out and graduated. And he's prosecuting you, Donald. And a black woman is doing that same exact thing in Georgia. And a black woman forced you to pay a $175 million fine that's out now also in question because the people who put it up, that might not be legit. Donald Trump is being held to account by the very multicultural, multiracial democracy that he's trying to dismantle. Go DEI. My DEIs are bringing it home on today.
Trump's a racist, too. You can throw that into the Manhattan lawsuit as well. Surely, all of this suggests that Donald Trump is finally finished. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is The Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on today's show. You can get to the live video stream of this program at TrumpetDaily.com or at the Rumble channel. Just go to Rumble.com/TrumpetDaily. If you want to submit some feedback, we'd love to see it, read it, maybe even read it on the air. Just email us, td@thetrumpet.com. We have kind of a special show lined up. We've got, I think, about 26 minutes. The first half, you could say. We'll play the second half on tomorrow's show. But about 26 minutes of the interview that we had with General Michael Flynn on Sunday afternoon, and as a lead-in to that sit-down discussion, we also have our youth choir singing the Star Spangled Banner, the extended version, very beautiful rendition, our young people singing. This happened right before General Flynn was introduced. So you can get a little bit of music in the middle part of this show. And the second segment today will then be General Flynn and the discussion that we had with him on Sunday. So here is this this expired misdemeanor. It's not even a federal crime. Assuming that what Trump did was wrong, it's a misdemeanor. And they're trying to throw him in prison on this. It's a case that even Alvin Bragg looked at and said, come on, there's nothing to this. The DOJ, Alvin Bragg's predecessor, all of them agree that you don't hear it in the cold open, though. You hear about Donald Trump going to sleep. That's right. He shut his eyes yesterday. Trump came out and said that the judge is basically saying he's got to be there for the full trial. Six, seven weeks? Can't go to Barron's graduation? No. This is too important, you know. This case going on right during the campaign season for the president of the United States. You wish, like one of the Fox commentators said on the show last night, or their show last night, you wish they'd just come out and one of them, two of them, they'd come out and honestly say what it is they're actually trying to do. Yeah, it's campaign interference. We're trying to keep him from becoming president. So even if it's a case that Bragg said, I can't get him on this. Well, now he's changed his tune because, well, he had a couple of assistants that they resigned in protest. This is being orchestrated by the Joe Obama White House, as we got into yesterday. And it happens, by the way, just as Lee Zeldin pointed out in a New York Post piece, it's happening as New York City is falling apart. There's crime all over the place. And they're trying to get Donald Trump on, what, a clerical error? Really? Hush money? $130,000 for an NDA? I think, didn't President Clinton pay Paula Jones $600,000, $700,000, $800,000? This stuff happens all the time, especially in D.C. and especially in Hollywood. But get Trump. Get Trump. That's what this is all about. Prevent Trump from being president. Zeldin says here, Americans from all walks of life agree upon one hard truth. New York City isn't what it used to be. No, it isn't. It's become the epitome of failed far-left policies pushing residents to flee every day. Every day. It gives all these examples. The NYPD officers that were beaten by illegal aliens. Women that are just being sucker punched as they head to the subway, assuming you even want to ride on the subway. Too many crazies. Too much violence. All these violent crimes. Zeldin says businesses are shuttering, homeowners are unable to defend their property from squatters, and the cost of living continues to rise while quality of life deteriorates by the day. The Big Apple is becoming rotten. It certainly is. And yet amid all of this, yes, in the Big Apple, they're trying to put Bad Orange Man behind bars. For the next 6 weeks, all eyes will be on 100 Center Street, where Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg has launched his show trial in the world's media capital. He's eagerly doing his party's bidding by prosecuting Trump using an obscure legal tactic to yield a campaign talking point. It's never been happened. You heard the distinguished historians in the cold open there. I mean, the founders couldn't have wrapped their minds around this. Well, he's right about that. This communist attack on the United States. America's under attack. Never before has a charge like this been brought without evidence of an underlying crime. Bragg refuses even to identify one. So here again, just like exaggerating the worth of your properties, there's no crime underlying this. There's no who was hurt by it. Here's President Trump paying this woman to shut up, essentially. Just keep your mouth shut, would you? I'm running for office. And by the way, it bothers my wife, you out there doing this all the time. So the payment was in 2016. The alleged affair was supposedly in 2006. The statute of limitations alone nukes this. But no, they're able to blow the dust off of this obscurity and blow it into some kind of a felony. Well, not just one, what, 30-something? Bragg single-handedly turned countless law-abiding New Yorkers into crime victims with his blatant refusal to enforce the law. He's not going after actual criminals. There's all these cases that are still going from 2021, 2022. Violent criminals. No violence in this case. Trump's not in prison. It's not like they're trying to figure out, you know, hey, if he did murder this guy, we better kind of expedite this trial and get to the bottom of this. No, but they're pushing, trying to expedite this because it's got to happen before. It's got to happen before November. Listen to Fox News discussing this case yesterday, clip 4.
I was a DA, and the way you bring and try cases is you try them based upon what should go first. In New York State, and I've spoken to several DAs about this, in New York State, people in jail get a priority in terms of timing. A person who's charged with a violent crime gets a priority. So think about the fact that we are backlogged because of COVID. But because of the backlog, every major DA's office in New York State is trying cases, violent felony cases from 21 in 2022. They are not trying cases where the defendant is not in jail and where it's not a violent crime. And yet you come to Manhattan, which has 4 times the caseload of the DAs that I spoke with, and they're taking a case out of order where the defendant is not in jail. It's not a violent crime because they want to make sure that they can parade Donald Trump as a convicted felon in front of the American people. And the idea of a speedy trial is not for the prosecution. It's for the defense. And you couple this with the violation, the discovery violation of 30,000 pages of information that they should have had 6 months to review. They gave him 2 weeks. This is all an effort to make sure that Donald Trump does not run for office in a positive way.
They got to get that tag. He's a convicted felon. That's what Joe Obama's campaigning on. Hey, look at my opponent is a convicted felon. That's never before happened. And so they're going to go through hundreds of potential jurors because they got to find 12. They got to find 12 that will get Trump. They know it'll be overturned down the road. That doesn't matter. It'll probably be overturned unanimously, whether at the appellate level or the Supreme Court. But that doesn't factor into this. Not at all. And none of the talking heads care about that. They're just there. Well, they're there with their exploding heads going on and on about, oh, he was sleeping. Oh, well, the founders couldn't have envisioned this. Listen to one of the Fox News hosts talking about, again, how it'd be nice to just hear them, to hear even one come out and say, yeah, we're just trying to get Trump. We don't want him to be president. Clip 5.
I think, you know, it would be refreshing to see the other side reframe this honestly. Like last week, Bill Maher was talking about abortion and he said, it's murder, but I'm okay with it.
Yep.
You could despise that.
but it was honest from a liberal. So there, it would be nice to hear a Democrat get honest here and say, we get it. This case is bogus, purely political, but we're okay with it, right? We're just trying to bring Trump down or we'll lose the election.
Maybe Bill Maher will come out and honestly admit it. Yeah, it's just, look, we just got to try to stop Trump. Listen to one more talking about just the hypocrisy here, the hypocrisy at play, clip six.
I wonder how many men and women in the media are cheering this hush money charge, have signed non-disclosure agreements, which are exactly the same thing. You paid money not to divulge information to the press. In the last 20 years, the entertainment industry, media, politics have been doling out NDAs like there were Bed Bath & Beyond coupons. So I just find that kind of like, this is not a crime, but it's a hypocritical one when the media thinks it is.
Makes a good point. He makes a good point. Happens all the time. People are making hush money payments all over the place, and there's nothing illegal about it. But they've turned this into something illegal, something like a campaign violation. They've turned the expired misdemeanor into a felony in order to get Trump. Meanwhile, they're out there telling you, hey, everything under this current administration is completely above board. It's the definition of upholding law and order. And added to that, I mean, in America, I mean, it's just awesome right now. Everything is awesome. John Kirby, he's making the rounds, trying to say that what we saw with Iran attacking Israel over the weekend, that's perfectly normal. It's perfectly normal. Listen to clip three.
The Afghanistan withdrawal was a mess. We failed to stop Putin from going into Ukraine. The war with Israel and Hamas has been absolutely dreadful and destructive. Again, it's the first time Iran has aimed at Israel. China's military buildup is substantial. And that was just this morning what I came up with. Can you argue that American strength and persuasion is better today than it was 4 years ago globally?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, 100% I can, Bill, and I can do that very comfortably after serving for as long as I did in uniform. I'll tell you, this is a president who understands American leadership on the world stage.
Has President Biden considered maybe beefing up the public Iran posture to be more than just one word?
You're referring to don't.
Yeah.
And so let's talk about...
And they did it anyway.
And let's talk about what we did, Peter. Let's talk about don't and did. Let's talk about Saturday night.
Yeah, yesterday we talked about don't and did on this show. What they did was they signed off on Iran's attack. So Iran orders October 7. They started this whole thing. Israel's been on a counteroffensive since in Gaza. And then with the strike, I think it was in Damascus, these Iranian agents that were taken out. And now we've got to narrow the window and say, well, it's just in response to that strike in Damascus. So Iran is entitled to answer back, right? Iran's running the show the whole way through. And Obama, there's another clip I have later where someone on Fox, I believe, says that the Iranian people hate the authoritarian regime running the nation, running Iran. And yet Barack Obama loves them. He loves the mullahs. He can't get enough of the mullahs. He's hearing through Turkey that, hey, we're going to order a hit on Israel. And Joe Obama says, well, that's fine as long as there's a few limitations. I covered this on the program yesterday. America's being attacked from every angle. I mean, it's so obvious. And yet to hear them talk about how, hey, we've never had it so good. America's never been stronger. It's never been more powerful. It's never been more persuasive on the world stage. Listen to Morning Joe, the morning meltdown, the daily meltdown. This is just from this morning, clip one.
You live in the most powerful, greatest country on the face of the earth. And you're voting for a guy that tells you every day that America sucks? What's wrong with you? Who raised you? What history did you read?
That's it.
Like, where are you from? And you don't read. But gives you red. Mike, the facts are clear. And I'm getting tired of saying this to people who claim to be patriotic but hate America because they're always running America down. They're always trashing America. They're always saying America's horrible. Its democracy doesn't work. We need a dictatorship if Donald Trump doesn't win. I'm tired of people running America down. They give their viewers anything to try to make America look bad. They are obsessed on trashing America when America is stronger, more powerful than ever before. Its economy stronger and more powerful than ever before. So what do? They find a trans athlete in Utah. Our world's coming to an end. Help us, Jesus. The country ain't the country I was raised in. No, it's better. It's stronger. We're more powerful. Our military's more powerful because they are fed a steady stream of hate America first rhetoric, which I suppose is why you have the chairman of the House GOP saying that some of those dupes, backbenchers, are actually clinging to pro-Russian propaganda and spreading it across their districts, across America, and across the House floor.
You think he'd be saying any of this if Donald Trump was in the Oval Office at the moment? He would be telling you how horrible America is. In fact, the underlying premise of all the reporting on this network is that the founders were racist and Americans have racism built into their DNA. How rich for him to now say, America's never been better. It's better than when, you know, it's better than my father's generation or my grandfather's generation. I mean, looking at Willie's face a little ways into this, I think he's even wondering, are we live on the air at the moment? This man, Joe Scarborough's unhinged, mentally deranged, severe case of TDS, and he's not alone. In the New York Post, you look at what's happening in America, you look at the ones supporting Hamas, and now Iran, people in our nations taking to the streets to support Iran and to burn American flags. In the New York Post, hundreds of anti-Israeli protesters wreaked havoc in Lower Manhattan on Monday, storming the Brooklyn Bridge and grinding traffic to a halt as cops in riot gear fought to contain the unrest. The marchers, including some who burned American flags, while one yelled "Death to America." See, they're entitled to do this. Donald Trump sends out a mean tweet. He needs to go to prison. But we're okay with "Death to America." Death to America. I mean, that's free speech, isn't it? Free speech. Photos posted on social media showed the massive mob invading the span during the disruptive rally. Only the latest in the Big Apple since the October 7 Hamas terror attack. This is just now. It's now normal. And think about it, even the timing. These people taking to the streets right after Iran fired 300 missiles at Israeli civilians, just like the October 7 attack. And then as soon as Israel defends itself, well, immediately we have to change the discussion to include disproportionate. It's got to be proportionate, Israel. And really, I mean, the loss on Saturday night really is a win. That's what Joe Obama's out there saying. Look, Israel, just take it as a victory. Run a victory lap. The National Post up in Canada, within minutes of news emerging that Iran had launched an unprecedented direct attack at Israel, Canadian cities were witness to scenes of open celebration. Open celebration? I think isn't it Joe Scarborough who said everything is so much better today than it was even a generation ago? Is it really? In one widely circulated video, demonstrators were shown cheering. They were dressed like Islamists, showing cheering, banging drums, and lighting off smoke bombs as a speaker announced the Islamic Republic of Iran has just sent tens of drones toward Israel. They were cheering the attack. listen to Fox News talking about the protesters in New York burning American flags. Clip 7.
Anti-Israeli protesters find the Hezbollah flag in front of the New York Stock Exchange. Yes, the terroristic flag located in Lebanon. They're chanting also death to America in a few languages while marching through the streets of various cities in America.
Protesters jamming up traffic for hours on the Brooklyn Bridge, some even burning the American flag. Look at that.
Meanwhile, on the other coast in San Francisco, 38 activists were arrested after shutting down the Golden Gate Bridge for almost 5 hours. Another group blocked several sections of the freeway around the Bay Area, brought the city to a grind.
And in Chicago, travelers heading to O'Hare International Airport were forced to drag their luggage down the highway after protesters completely blocked access to main terminal. 54 people were arrested there.
It's unbelievable that this is allowed to happen. I mean, this is a day. Also, it's not even a day in which, you know, you could say that there was a bombing of relief workers in Gaza. This is a day in which 24 hours prior, the country of Israel was under attack.
Yeah, the timing. I mean, that makes it more powerful. If you're the demonstrators, hey, let's take to the streets and show our true colors. Let's support the mullahs of Iran. Something that even ordinary Iranian citizens would not do. They took to the streets, remember, in 2009 to protest the mullahs, the authoritarian regime. And Barack Hussein Obama hung them out to dry. He sides, you see, with the mullahs. He sides with Hamas. He's empowering the number one state sponsor of terror. And he's the one behind so much of this Jew hatred that you see coming from the swamp as it's projected toward Israel, as it's handcuffing the Israeli government in this fight for survival. That's really what's at stake for little Israel. Well, there's a lot more I could get to today, but I promised you already the special music and then the lead-in to our discussion with General Flynn on Sunday. Before that, we'll have a short promo. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We'll be right back.
Daily news, Bible prophecy. See the connection on the Trumpet Daily. Are you feeling overwhelmed by the flood of news and information? You need something to sift the news and bring you only what matters most. You need the Trumpet Daily. You also need something to help you understand not just what's happening now, but what will happen next. You need the Trumpet Daily. Only the Trumpet Daily accurately matches daily news to precise Bible prophecies. Because Bible prophecy is the only tool up to the task of sifting the news down to what's important and showing you what will happen next. Join host Stephen Fleury every weekday. Go to TrumpetDaily.com.
For the land of the free.
Jesus Christ came on. That the havoc of war and the battle's confusion of home and a country should leave us no more. Their blood has washed out their foul footsteps from
see. Thank you very much. Goosebumps right there. Appreciate the work on the extended version. Well, today we welcome back to Armstrong Auditorium our special guest of honor. He's, as I think everyone in here knows, he's visited us once before. He spent quite a lot of time with us last August. This year, he's back at Armstrong Auditorium. Next year, maybe he's back in Washington, D.C. We'll see. We'll see what happens. Please help me in welcoming again to Armstrong Auditorium, General Michael Flynn.
Great. Wow. You guys are great. Amazing. Amazing. That's probably the first time anybody's heard that entire rendition like that, you know? Beautiful, just beautiful.
And it's not often that half of the audience is also in the youth chorus.
Yeah, so. That's good.
So why don't you, first of all, love the bus.
Yeah, if you haven't seen it, it'll be parked out front here somewhere.
Yeah, we're going to move the bus from here over to here so that everybody gets to look at it this evening when they
we're
come
driving
to
it,
the movie.
It's actually 35 cities in 55 days. And this is number 8. And so it's exhausting, but it's absolutely necessary. And we're blessed to be here with you all back here. And you know, you guys have a great, you have a beautiful campus here, beautiful people. And it's just wonderful to be back here in this part of the country. We're in a period of time for you all, because most of all are young kids. We're in a period of time where you need to really be paying attention. And those people like me, we need to be really doing our jobs even more. You know, you have a job to do, and that's to basically continue to get yourself educated and really, really understand all of the dynamics. Learn what you can and learn everything that you can and learn it as best you can, right? I mean, you got, you know, obviously you got so many different talents, but really learn about people. Really, really learn about people. And the most important person, most important people to learn about is yourself. Really, really understand who you are, especially I'm looking at the young people. You know, don't allow others to define you. You define yourself. Peer pressure is extraordinary in this moment of your life. My mom used to say it's the worst time to be alive as a teen, to be a teenager, right? She would tell us that when we were teenagers. We would look at her like, Mom, what are you saying? But it's so much peer, there's so much pressure. And so if you can define yourself, and I mean really define yourself, who you are, who you want to be, your confidence, you know, all the emotions and all the changes that you're going through, believe me, you will be vastly more successful as you, and then you'll lead people. You'll then start to lead people because you're going to start to really understand others and how they see you, right? And you have to maintain a level of understand your character traits, right? Like humility is a big character trait of who you must at least understand and understand it. If you have that ability, if you have that about you, you know, watch your ego, right? Check your ego at the door, right? I always use the phrase, it's about the mission and not about your ego, okay? And some of you see that, you know, kids see that, and you're gonna see that later in life. What's the mission? What is the mission of our organization? Mission over ego. Okay, if we let egos get in the way of accomplishing the mission, and if the mission is important and it's a noble cause, then nothing can stop you as an individual or you on whatever team that you're a part of. And never stop learning. Never stop learning. Never, you know, don't walk away from this institute here, this institution of education really, and development, and think that, well, I got my degree, man, I can't wait. You know, don't stop. Keep learning. And, you know, go get additional degrees, but don't spend your whole life in school, right? Don't spend your whole life in school. You can learn even without getting a piece of paper, although I think that's still important too for some of you who will go on to higher education and do other things. But don't stop learning. That's, you know, every time I get a chance to talk to young kids especially, you don't know what you're going to learn until you start learning, okay? And what a great, great life that you'll have. But it will be a life filled with sacrifice, okay? The best in the field, whatever the field is, doesn't make any difference. The best, they get up early, they are disciplined, they're willing to sacrifice, they're good with other people, they know how to work as a member of a team, they persevere, you know, they're diligent, and they understand what their goals in life are, and they're always striving for those. And when they get there, when they feel they're there, if you're really good at it, you have another goal and another goal. You stretch yourself, right? Stretch yourself, and you'll live an unbelievably long, positive life, and you'll feel like, man, what a wonderful thing, and you'll never look back and regret anything.
You mentioned the young people. I saw a few clips from, you said you've gone to 8 cities. I've seen a little bit of the footage mm-hmm. from those visits, and there have been a lot of young children.
Yeah.
Your movie is very, I mean, it's very sobering in a lot of ways and very serious, and for a young child, it would be slower moving. Mm-hmm. So what do you, you kind of touched on it, I guess, just now, but what do you feel like you want for young people to take away from the film?
I think the for young people, it's about family. I think the strength of my family is representative of what America has still. We still have that. I mean, the purposeful, intentional breakdown and destruction of the family unit that goes back decades is very real. And I think my family is a sort of a regular family. I mean, we're regular people that decided to do more than what people where we came from thought you could achieve. You know, and we did it because we had good parents. You know, we had good tough parents and good tough upbringing. But I think for the young people, I think it's family.
There's a lot of people. A lot of ordinary Americans being persecuted mm-hmm. in our country today, particularly the January 6th protesters. What would you, like some of them wouldn't really have very many resources to try to
right.
fight back. So what would you, like what advice would you give to them as far as standing firm and not just surrendering?
Don't ever talk to the FBI. I hate saying that. But sadly, but the conviction rates for the Department of Justice in this country are astronomical. They're out of control. And that's the reason why, and so it's unaffordable. You know, I mean, I'm not some super wealthy guy, and it was out of my league, well out of my league. But for most Americans, it's unaffordable. So the conviction rates in the Department of Justice across the nation, there's 63 assistant attorney generals in this country. Okay, so you have an assistant attorney general here in Oklahoma City as an example. So you have 63 of these offices all across the country. So they're incentivized with very few examples, but they're incentivized by convictions. They get promoted. So anybody that's thinking about being a lawyer out there and becoming a prosecutor, meaning you're working for the government, they get incentivized and they get actually bonuses. They get paid bonuses for their conviction rates, okay? Not for discovering the truth. And if you've ever met a prosecutor, a former prosecutor, who got out of the Department of Justice, we met one in Branson the other night. We have great, amazing testimony from her after the movie, after she saw it. Former prosecutor, she got out of the prosecution world because she saw the corruption, because they go for convictions, okay? You don't get patted on the back for discovering the truth and saying, this gal, this guy, there, you know what, there's evidence here, it shows they're not guilty, that's not them. If they do that too often, they won't have a job. They'll be out of a job, and they'll be ostracized within the legal community because they're not doing what the government wants them to do. That's called overreaching government. It's an overbearing, overreaching government. That's a form of government that we don't want in this country. That's a tyrannical government who wants to convict people instead of discovering the truth. And there's a lot of people, thousands and thousands of people that are in jail that have never committed a crime. The Department of Prisons works for the Attorney General. Okay, Department of Prisons works for the Department of Justice. Okay, it's kind of like the military-industrial complex. You know, there's a cycle that they have to keep those things. These are big, big budgets. Okay, so now I'm going off the convictions that incentivize prosecutors, lawyers who have lied, okay, to judges, knowing that there's exculpatory evidence that's available, but they hide it. And they let people go to prison. And they don't even, they don't think about, well, this guy or this gal, you know, they have a family. They have children. They have grandmas, grandpas, aunts, uncles. But they don't, you know, they don't seem to care about that. So we need to understand that about our country right now, because that's the weaponization. When we use this word, weaponization, right? The weaponization of government, weaponization of the intelligence community, weaponization of the rule of law system in this country, weaponization of the White House, weaponization of the judiciary. Well, weaponization really just means corruption. And it means that people have decided that they are going to, you know, take care of themselves instead of doing the right thing. And if you're, and I know you're taught this here, I'll foot stomp, right? That when you walk past something that you know is wrong, okay, you know it's wrong, you see something that you just say, well, that ain't right. You know, if you have the ability to do something about it, do something about it. Otherwise, if you walk past something that is wrong, you know it's morally wrong, ethically wrong, maybe even legally wrong, and you walk past it, and you just say, I don't want to deal with that. That's your new standard. You just accepted a new standard in your life. Don't walk past something in life that you know is morally or ethically wrong. You know, figure out what you can do about it. And it's a scary thing. It can be scary. You know, you can be like, boy, something might happen to me. I might get in, you know, somebody might say something nasty about me. Somebody might do something to me. We have to, in our society, we have to have, you know, not be fearless, but understand the fear that does exist inside of each of us and do something about it and correct those things. Correct those things. If I did that on the battlefield, more people would die. If I just decided, well, you know, you don't have to clean your rifles today, you know? You don't have to brush your teeth. You don't have to wash your feet, you know? And if I let it go a couple of days, next thing I know, I've got an entire platoon of people that are out of action because they're not taking care of their hygiene. It's that simple. That's a basic example, but every day you see something. Garbage. You walk around this campus, beautiful campus. I'm you know, relentless about this stuff. If I see some, you know, piece of paper blowing in the wind, if I can't go track it down, I'll go, hey, let's pick that thing up. Right? I mean, it's this simple. And we accept too much substandard behavior and substandard activity and morality and ethical behavior that is substandard in our country today. And we can't do that anymore. Just can't do that. So,
as far as the corrupt system and reforming it, I think Kash Patel made the statement the other day with Steve Bannon that it needs to be clean. They need to clean house top to bottom. And then Joe Biden came out with the rules to make it harder to fire federal employees.
Yeah.
So have you had any discussions with President Trump on how you can go about reforming a system that's become so corrupt?
Yeah, I mean, some of these things, you can never reform on the margins, okay? You can't reform on the margins, not government. There are whole cloth actions that must be taken to correct what is going on in our country. And when I say whole cloth, that means that's a euphemism for, you know, like pulling the band-aid, right? So people always ask me like questions like that, and they'll say, you know, okay, if you were going to go back into the government, what would be the first thing that you would do? And I think a lot of people say, well, I think he would say that he wants to reform the FBI, right? Because of what they did to me and the Department of Justice. And partially the answer is yeah. But I would actually eliminate, not reform, eliminate the Department of Education in this country. That would be talking about, you know, sprinkling fairy dust, right? And shutting the doors, thanking the janitorial workers, the secretaries, the administration staff, thanking them for their service to this country and in that building. And I'd take and tell everybody on Monday, the doors are going to be locked. Leave your badges on your desk and you'll have 30 days of pay. So we will, the President of the United States can authorize that. Actually, he can authorize more. at least 30 days of pay, and in that 30 days, you know, go find another job. Go somewhere else. Because if we continue on this path with this Department of Education, we are going to have the filth that we have in our public school system. We spend more money than like the next 10 nations combined that are large, very strong, economically viable nations. We spend more than all of them combined, and we're like 30th in the world in public education. Okay, so I just mentioned the Department of Education. There's plenty. There's things called commissions, activities, agencies, departments. Those are four of the big types of organizations in our government. And there's many of them that are worthless and corrupt. And they get budgets. They get big budgets. And you kind of go, what do they do, right? What do they do? But what I do know is that we have a trust problem. We have a massive deficit of trust between the American people and, frankly, the moms and dads. But we definitely have it between the American people and our government. Huge deficit of trust. People don't trust the government. And flippantly, we never really have trusted the government because you want the government to stay out of your life. You want to be able to do the things you want to do because you have a great idea and you have the initiative to do it. But we have a deficit of trust. And so, you know, that's a big part of when we talk about reform. You know, you've got to understand where to start and what to do and how to do it. And you have to have a president, because only the president of the United States can do this. Can't do this with the vice president. You can't do it with the secretary. You can only do it if you have the president's premature, his stamp. Okay? And you don't have to go back and ask for permission. So if the president says, the secretary of defense, secretary of state, director of this, the director of that, has my full authority to do whatever it takes to make the reforms and to change whatever he or she needs to do, and says it publicly, then we can go to town. Then we can go to town. Now, I don't use this often, but that scares the hell out of a lot of people in Washington, D.C. Okay? That scares people. And listen, and hearing me say something like that, it frightens them. Because you know what? Because I know how to do that. I know exactly how to do that. I know exactly where to start.
What do you think that President Trump, let's assume he is voted in, he's inaugurated next January, what kinds of changes do you think would be happening first? Like dramatic?
Yeah, like, yeah. I think that he's learned a lot about people. So I think that that's a really important change. And I think that's something that that he's learned a lot about. And I've seen this actually lately in the last probably month, maybe the last 2 months, where I've seen him and heard him and spoken to him. I think that he doesn't want to come in to the presidency and start to, you know, slash and burn everything, right? He really would like to come in and strengthen the economy, you know, stand on firm, you know, sort of retake the moral high ground of authority, not only as the leader of the United States, but also sort of the leader of the world, to be that true North Star or that beacon of light for the world. I think that's what he wants to do, but I think he's going to have to have some measure of accountability. The American people, they're demanding it right now. People want to see accountability. And accountability, as long as it's accountability equally, then it's equally applied, the American people are okay with that. You know, we're okay with that.